Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, this is Dave Lincoln. Welcome to Lincoln on Lending. It is October 12th, and we are providing you up-to-the-minute information of what is going on in the industry. We welcome you again to the program. For those of you that are dialing in and tuning in for the first time, please pass this around. If it's of value, we appreciate your feedback. By the way, we've gotten so many positive comments from so many of you tuned in last week. Thank you so much. We welcome you back. And we hope that you'll pass this on. As we do each week, we review three primary areas. We start off at the top of the program with a rate update, and we're going to do that in just a minute. Then we go into the legislative update. There's so much going on in the world of Congress, both in the legislatures, both national and the state. It's almost impossible to keep track of it. We try to digest that for you, and then we go into the latest hot topic. So let's get right into rates, and each week we are so fortunate to have Joe Farr of MBS Quote Line on the line. Joe, good to have you back again this week.
Good to be here, Dave. I appreciate it.
What is going on? And now, by the way, we should note, Joe, for the sake of the listeners, that we're pre-recording this Friday afternoon. The markets are closed, so and again, Monday is a holiday, and I'm at the Mortgage Banking Conference in San Diego, and so it necessitates us to record this early. So appreciate you doing this on your Friday afternoon before you take off. And
sure.
And so what's going on this week? A lot interesting market movement.
Yeah, it really
here, Joe.
Is. No, we through the first part of this week, we were just continuing to see rates go lower, and you know, the trend for most of the month of September has been rates moving lower. And last week, the week ending October 2nd, we saw a really nice improvement in rates with weak economic data pretty much driving the markets, pulling stocks lower, but pushing mortgage-backed security prices higher and mortgage rates lower.
Yeah.
But this week, we didn't have a lot of economic information. The week ending 10-9, we didn't have any real economic news of significance to drive the market. But what we did have and has become, you know, a bigger and bigger issue is the Treasury auctions. We had Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And the first two auctions went really well. We saw good demand. We saw strong form participation, and the yield required fell lower during the auction than what it had been before. So really, really good demands for the 3-year and the 10-year. And consequently, the mortgage market kind of liked that, seeing that, there's lots of demand and mortgage rates fell on Wednesday pretty well. And really, we got to the lowest rates we had been since all the way back into late May of this year. So really saw some nice things working during the week.
But then we had the rest of the week. Today it looked like we gave back a little bit here, Joe.
Well, we did. We're down over a half a point in price today.
Ouch.
A couple things. The 30-year auction, which was conducted on Thursday, was not well received. It was the bid to cover ratio was a whole lot less than what it was the last time the auction was put out, and so was the foreign participation. It was about 35%, where it was close to 50% the last time the 30-year bonds were auctioned. So the market didn't like that. Yield rose starting at the auction yesterday and continued throughout today. I noticed today alone the price of a 30-year Treasury bond is off 2%.
Wow.
So it was a big move, and mortgages kind of followed suit. another thing happened. The market is very in tune to what the Fed's doing, and overnight, Bernanke, or actually Thursday evening, Bernanke made comments to an audience in which he was reiterating his current stance is we expect to have to keep rates low for some period of time, but but's becoming a little bit more clear. But yeah. when it appears the economy is strong enough, we're going to have to raise rates, and so that's sort of what's starting to come in. But for the week, mortgage rates were off about a little less than half a point, and in price. And so that's about an eighth in rate. Sad thing is that we kind of turned around the gains of the early part of the week and wound up with rates just a little higher than they began the week.
Yeah, so it's not enough. Erasing 1 week's gains is, while we hate to see it, we love that trend where it goes lower. I mean, rates are still at the lowest they've been. As Scott would so amply point out if he was on the call with us, he'd point out, yeah, but look at where rates are at. They're the lowest they've been in years. It's a great time to refinance, great time to buy. It's certainly a good time to be buying right now with the prices of some of the properties out there. And these rates are still at historical lows. But, you know, even with Bernanke's comments out there that says that, you know, when the economy starts to recover, we're going to have to raise interest rates. Well, duh, that's kind of like, I don't understand, Joe, the reaction to that. And if you could give us some insights, is it just any news of anything about the rates having to go up? Everyone knows that eventuality in the world of rates, it's like what goes up comes down as a law of physics. Well, in interest rates, what goes down has got to come up. It's a kind of an inverse reaction to that. I mean, what do you think is in the psyche? Do you have any idea, any insights you can share out there, or is it just they listen to anything he says and react to it?
No, there's still some concern out there for the economy by investors who either have money sitting on the sidelines or who have a perception that we're going to go down again before we come back up. You know, this week was a tremendous week in the stock market, probably helped pull mortgage rates a little higher in and of itself, but it's been amazing to me that we have seen people buying 30-year investments or, you know, even mortgages that have an average life of 7 to 10 years locking in these low rates. It either says that they believe that we are in for a weak economy and they don't want to have their money anywhere else, or maybe we're not truly not going to have any inflation. Maybe some are betting on deflation. But the kinds of yields that we are seeing right now for investors over that long a period of time are almost unprecedented.
Yes, they are.
And you know, not only do we have the economic recovery that we all expect and know will happen soon, and when it does, the chance of increasing inflation is there. We also have this issue of the Fed stopping their purchases of mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah,
that's going to happen at the end of first quarter of 2010. So, you know, both things. The market's just out there screaming at you that it's going to go higher. Rates are going to go higher.
Yeah.
And boy, if you do have a transaction to do, it would feel very good to you, I'm sure, to get that done right now.
For you loan officers that are listening into this program, I mean, you should be arming yourself with this information each week. And the fact that you can have your borrowers come even listen in on this part of it, I mean, record this little segment. Put it out there in your voicemail. Let them listen to it. Let us quote them us as a source on this. And you can't get a better source to quote than MBS Quote Line. And if you're logged into their website right now, as I am, you look at what the economic calendar is coming up and what's going to be driving it. So let's get into that. The economic events for the week ahead. While I'm in San Diego at the National Mortgage Bankers Conference and enjoying all the festivities there, it's a reduced population, Joe. The number of registries, those registered for the conference are way down, but we're looking forward to hearing. We're looking for some significant announcements, one of which I want to get your opinion on in a minute. But while we're there, you're going to be staying back and manning the ranch and making sure things are doing well. Let's talk about the economic calendar looking forward. Starting Wednesday, Wednesday is really where things start becoming significant, right?
Wednesday, we're going to see the retail sales number come out, and that's the best barometer, the largest measure of consumer spending activity. Where because of how the auto and the cash for clunker stuff was working in the month prior, the retail sale number may be a little bit skewed, but they also put out a retail sales number with where they exclude the auto and the cost of or the price of oil and or gasoline. So we'll see a number that will give us a pretty good indication of whether the consumer's starting to feel better about their position. And, you know, the expectations are that it's going to be lower than last month. But what's so important to the market is not what the number actually is, but what they think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And what the number is versus what they think it's going
to
be.
Yeah, it's relation to what they predicted, yes.
Exactly. And so Wednesday's big number, retail sales, comes out at 8:30 Eastern. Also on Wednesday, the minutes from the last Fed meeting are going to be released. And, you know, you would think that that's already old information, but every time the minutes are released, people scrutinize, you know, every single word and every sentence that they put in their statements, and they find reason to believe that the Fed's thinking something more or less than what they thought they were thinking. So that always gets some reaction in the marketplace. Thursday, though, probably holds the biggest item, which is the release of the consumer price index for the prior month, for the month of September.
The all-important CPI, yes.
That's right. That is the true. That's a measure of inflation that gets probably the most attention, certainly the most attention in the press. And CPI also can be skewed by things like the cost of gasoline and so they do what's called a core CPI, which is a measure of items that aren't typically volatile prices, kind of an old carryover from days past, where they exclude food from that because how droughts and other conditions used to affect the cost of food. But they also exclude energy. So food and energy are not in the core CPI number. They expect the consensus is for a very tame inflation number, rise for the month of only 0.1%, and that would mean the rise for the year, September to September, is going to be somewhere around 1.5%, which is very tame.
Very tame.
And so, that's expected, and if anything above that comes out, that's going to be concerning for the marketplace.
We also got jobless claims. Is that a? If you're looking at the website right now, as I am, you see the green stars by retail sales on Wednesday and CPI. So obviously those are the ones you're focusing on the most.
Right.
You know, jobless claims, is that going to present any surprises and to be a market mover, do you think?
Well, it had a slight impact this week. The jobless claims were a little less than what was thought.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a surprise, and so yeah, it can. But Dave, it's not, it comes out weekly, and there aren't a lot of big surprises in it, and there are measures that are more significant than that.
Yeah.
Also on Thursday, we're going to get a sense of a couple of the regional manufacturing activities. The New York Fed puts out their survey results of manufacturers in their market at 8:30, and at 10 o'clock the Philadelphia Fed puts theirs out. So both of those are second tier sort of indicators of activity because they are regionalized, but people do react to it, and so it certainly behooves you to be watching.
There is a lot going on in the market, and we're going to depart just briefly for rates, Joe. I want to get your comments on an announcement or a report that came out this week, and I believe it was reported, Reuters is actually one that reported on the 7th that said, 8:30 in the morning, that said that Fannie and Freddie are working on a program to help independent mortgage bankers get access to short-term credit needed to make home loans. And the Wall Street Journal, they're quoting the Wall Street Journal talking about it. And they're it's a bit vague, but it does say in here the journal sources say that the companies Fannie and Freddie are planning to build an undisclosed pilot program that Freddie has with Provident Funding and Associates and a warehouse lender, Natty Mac. Natty Mac has got the Guggenheim Fund behind it, and we're familiar with both companies. It's interesting to me, Joe, that immediately right on the heels of that, Fannie Mae came out in a number of parts of the country. We had one of our employees in Atlanta, and there was a Fannie Mae employee addressed this without, you know, unsolicitedly came forward with a comment and says, "We don't know what they're talking about. We're not aware of it." You know, so it's kind of like they're not part of the federal government, so that which they deny is almost that which gives credibility. So, anytime you watch a regulator denying something or the legislator denying something, it makes you more suspicious. At least it does me, Joe. Yeah. But I think that's an interesting sign. Did you hear that, read that, or get any insights?
Well, I didn't know that they had, that anyone had disputed its, you know, the plan. As I understood it, Dave, what Fannie and Freddie had hoped to do was to make credit more available by, in essence, guaranteeing or providing a takeout earlier in the process, so that those who make the loans will feel more comfortable about it. But, you know, it's kind of ironic here. They're trying to enhance credit, and they're the ones that are in conservatorship.
Yeah, it's interesting. there's an irony about that that is interesting. I think it's interesting also note that, you know, they say one hand is to provide credit. We've heard that clearly. That's been much anticipated, that they're going to be out there with almost like an early purchase facility. Even put was reported that for product that's not necessarily going to be have to be sold to Fannie and Freddie. In other words, they're willing to purchase product off of warehouse lines to keep these warehouse lines turning. And they're willing to purchase product, even that which may not be directed and going towards the agency. So it's an interesting development. I wanted to put that out this week. Again, the representatives across the country from Fannie and Freddie both said, no, we don't know anything about this. We're unaware of this deal going with Natty Mac, but they're a large organization. I think it would be an I want to put out this one comment. We're fairly certain that they will never, their charter does not allow them, at least it didn't allow them, and that may be changing, but it has not allowed them, clearly, to be operating a primary, it's referred to as a primary facility, a credit facility. In other words, a warehouse line that actually funds the initial loan. There has been talk, in addition to purchasing the facilities, but is this early purchase facility could function a little bit like a warehouse line or a gestation credit facility, which allows you to sweep the original warehouse line, freeing up more liquidity to fund loans. But some interesting developments, Joe, that I wanted to get your comments on this week. I know you're close to it, being very involved with the state associations and watching all that's going on. You're a great observer, and we appreciate your comments every week as you come on and share this. I appreciate, again, for you allowing me to get a hold of you on a late Friday afternoon to pre-record your comments so we can play them for their audience on Monday. Thank you so much. Any closing comments, Joe?
Well, just to remind everyone, the markets are closed on Monday, and that may have had some to do with the little bit of volatility we saw today. Yep. But, you know, they'll be back and churning on Tuesday, and if you want to stay on top of what is happening up to the second, please check us out.
We look forward to it. Thank you so much, Joe. Let's take a break for this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your...
Hello, this is Dave. We're back with the legislative update, and as we have every week, we're so fortunate to have Alice Alvey, with President of Mortgage U, giving us an update on all that is happening, both, well, right now we're just trying to keep track of what's going on at a national level. There's a lot going on at a state level. And so as you have that information, you're listening to it, Bring it into us. Or email it into us. We look forward to hearing from you. Again, my email address is D as in David, LYKKEN, at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Bring it into us. We'll bring it on the program and make it available, what's going on in your city, your state, and make it available on the radio program. Alice, thank you so much for joining the program again. You are right now. We're, as we said on the earlier segment, Alice, with Joe, we're pre-recording this, and we're recording this on Saturday, and it's going to be aired while the conference is going on, while you and I are walking around at the NBA conference on October 12th. And so you are in Denver, and so we have you by way of cell phone. Thank you so much for giving us a little of your time on Saturday. Let's get into the legislative update.
Hey, thanks, David. It's always great to be here, and Denver's a great town, although we have a little snow today, but I hear it always melts in 5 minutes anyway.
It does.
The legislative update, we've got quite a laundry list, and so I think what I'm going to do is start with what's new right now. And so new over the last week have been several bills, as many, at last I count, I think there were about seven of them, trying to address extending the home buyer tax credit. So you all may be familiar with the fact that we've got this $8,000 first-time home buyer tax credit that's due to expire December 1st, which really means your closings would have to occur by November 30th. And so, we have a little time, but not a lot by, congressional standards here to try and get an extension through. One of the things that I think is interesting is many of them say the same thing, that this bill is designed to extend the home buyer tax credit, and then they all say, and other things. And I'm trying to get to the bottom of what's all and the other. All right, that can be scary. For example, House Bill 3590 is to specifically extend the tax credit for military service members. They have been exempt from a recapture requirement under that previous first-time home buyer tax credit. And so within that bill, that one's passed the House. They put in a little piece, a little provision in there that says, oh, by the way, we're also going to increase tax penalties for corporations and S-corps. Nothing to do with the home buyer tax credit. So I think we all just have to watch out for what's getting slipped in with this, since it seems to be an easy pass. The other one is House Bill 3706, which is called FHA Taxpayer Protection Act. That title infuriates me. It implies that somehow taxpayers need to be protected from FHA. And that's not true. This would raise the required down payment to 5% for FHA loans.
Wow.
I think this is a challenge. Yeah, and I think, this is misguided. This is totally misguided. And we can talk about that in our Hot Topics section, I guess. On the rest of the bill front, we haven't seen any movement on anything else over the last week. So just a quick summary, we do have a bill to establish the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. This is House Bill 3126. It was introduced. It hasn't moved anywhere, but it's still considered a hot bill because it's getting a lot of discussion. People are trying to get to the bottom of, can we set up a better regulator? Let's see, House Bill 3146 to expand FHA, the mortgage, and to give more resources to FHA. That's got a lot of positive feedback coming in, more senators coming on that they're in favor of this. That did pass the House, so we're watching now. There hasn't been any new movement in the Senate. Let's see, the other ones that we're watching really don't have a lot of potential. The HBCC moratorium, House Bill 3044, with FHA now on the bandwagon to limit the, the use of appraisals, I don't know if you're going to see any movement on that one at the congressional level, but certainly worth watching. So that's my quick summary at the moment.
That's good. So you think HBCC, any reform of that, any reform of the reform, or any improvements on this is not going to probably be happening at this point. Doesn't look good.
Well, let me rephrase it. Let me say it this way. The bill is one sentence, and it just talks about HBCC. And if people really truly believe that limiting brokers and limiting the way appraisals are ordered, if they truly believe that's having a negative impact on the real estate market, then you can't just go after Fannie Freddie loans. Now that HUD's on the bandwagon, you're going to have to come up with wording in a bill that addresses everybody.
Yeah.
You can't refer to it as HVCC. So I think they got to go back to the drawing board on that one.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to see what has happened on there and the amount of noise that's happened. I think, Alice, what's so critical is for our listeners is HVCC went through and there was very little resistance to it, very little protest to it. And I think we learned a valuable lesson as an industry. We've got to be proactive. And again, the things that you've been saying on this program, which we're going to reiterate again today, is if you're going to get involved, first of all, you need to get involved, but if you're going to get involved, we hope you will, you need to do so in a manner that is intelligent, that's going to have an impact, that's going to bring about a difference in the way you communicate with your legislatures, with your representatives.
I had somebody bring up an interesting point yesterday in a seminar that we were doing. You know, we were talking about this. Make sure you've got the links to your senators and congressmen and make sure that you're communicating them like we've always said. Somebody brought up yesterday, you know, you've got to hit the media too.
Yeah.
Because that's really what starts to influence people just as much as having your voice heard through the various comment periods and through your Congress and Senate representatives.
Well, we encourage people to get your legislators listening to the representatives listening to this program. We're hearing more and more that some very staffers are now listening to Lickin' and Lending, this radio program, and they're wanting to hear our feedback. So we appreciate, Alice, you doing the diligent job of digesting all of this information. And I don't know anyone can really appreciate the hours that go into it. And Joe and I are just numb from trying to keep track of it. And we're in the program with you, so I can only imagine what our listeners are. Again, a lot of listeners are asking, are you guys going to have a website? Yes, we are. That's under construction. We're working on that. In fact, Alice and I and our producer, Andy Alvey, which is so grateful to have Andy producing these programs, are meeting in San Diego, and we're going to be working on hopefully putting the final touches on the design of the website so we can get this thing constructed and available for you. Thank you so much, Alice. Let's take a brief break for this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin'.
We're back, Alice. It's so good to have you on this topic. As we took a break here, Alice, you were talking about a couple of things that you wanted to bring forward and reiterate or clarify some points. Let's do that right here before we get into the hot topics.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I wanted to just clarify a couple things. We've talked about the high-priced mortgage loan rule that went into effect October 1st, and there were many requirements that if you trigger a high-priced mortgage loan, so if your APR is 1.5%, or more above the average prime offered rate, you know, the index that we have to use for comparison, then you trigger several things. And we've talked about that one of the key challenges is that it triggers that the customer will have to have an escrow account for taxes and insurance. I just wanted to put a little asterisk after that so people know that aspect of it is not in effect until April 1st. So
okay.
You have
good
time
point.
To get yourself up and running on that. There's been a lot of blog discussions about what to do with balloons, short-term balloon loans. And like a three-year balloon, the regulation says you have to make sure the customer can afford this loan 7 years out. And so, for example, in a three-year balloon, do I have to verify my customer can afford the balloon payment? You know, and who the heck can do that? You know,
yeah,
the only
too.
Reason if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't need the loan, right?
So, right. Well, isn't that the rule of lending? It used to be, how to get a loan? Well, don't need one, and then when you go to apply for one, if you don't need it, then you can get it. If you need it, we're going to look at you real hard. So we're back to those days.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, that's a great segue because one of the things you said in your notes before the program we talked about is that FHA is tightening up in general. Let's get into that a little bit. Talk about what you're seeing, what you're hearing from your clients. We're certainly hearing it as people are going to try to sell loans. I mean, this is a separate from the credit overlays that are coming out of the correspondent lenders, a lot of the bankers.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's the proposed bill to have increase FHA's minimum down payment requirements to 5%. I have never seen a bill that has gotten my blood boiling as fast as that one did when I saw it. It's so misguided. You know, FHA hasn't cost taxpayers a dime since 1934, and they've always had low down payment requirements. You know, Mr. Stevens has said FHA is going to get a chief credit risk officer. Let's let that person get in office.
Yeah.
And let them statistically look at what's going on with FHA, where the risks really are, instead of Congress thinking they know how to underwrite loans.
It feels like Congress is starting to take an ever more increasingly bigger position in the regulation of private enterprise, but even this is a private, this is the government backing these things. So we understand they're getting involved, but they're getting involved and looking forward. They're trying to set policies moving forward by looking out the rearview mirrors is what it kind of feels like, Alice. And it's a reactionary thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of them, and the way they title this is just crazy. You know, they're trying to scare taxpayers that, you know, FHA is the next subprime. We want to be proactive and make sure that they're not lending too much. That's not the right approach. And besides, no one's got any statistics to back up that increasing the down payment by 1.5% is going to change anything. You know, there's so many other things to look at. You know, you can look at layers of risk, you know, making sure the loans don't have too many layers of risk, which, frankly, we're seeing coming out of some of the automated underwriting engines right now.
Right.
You know, we're seeing very high debt ratios getting approved on some of these loans, and we want to make sure maybe that's a better area to look at. But let's take some time to look at the stats from the automated underwriting engines, which instead of just shooting at a target and not knowing if it's really going to solve anything.
You know what's interesting, Alice? I just wrote that article that is the convention issue for the secondary marketing executive. It's a widely circulated publication. I wrote the cover page article. And one of the things I cover in there is where we partly went wrong in this last business cycle is we went from relying on carbon-based systems, human beings, we started relying more and more on silicone-based systems, software, AUS systems. What's interesting, Alice, is the feedback I've gotten from people in the industry, and you won't believe the number of people outside the industry have called and say that is probably one of the most under-published points events that took place in this last business cycle that we think had a significant impact on what went wrong. So, I mean, I love that. You've got you and Jan Wetzel of Wetzel Trout, who you're in partnership with, have that the old mortgage. What's that old mortgage hags website that you were? That's such a cute name. I love it. But what's happened is we have got some wonderful talent that's been underwriting for years, and they have this intuition. The mortgage underwriters, male or female, both have this incredible ability to have that sixth sense when they're looking at a file that not sixth sense.
Right.
I'm not right. One of my loan officers all of a sudden, no, it's not six, it's just six. And I go, no, it's not. It's good. There's that thing, that intuitive ability of underwriters to capture information and sense something that's not right. And that's what our AUS systems are not picking up. And I'd love to get your feedback and perspective on that, because I've got a lot of talk on that, a lot of emails and phone calls as a result of that in the article.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm going to qualify it a little bit, because I know a lot of underwriters, and maybe these are the ones that the loan officers are talking about, who are basing it just on gut feeling. There are many of us, though, who have experience on both sides of the tracks, on both the origination and the servicing, and that's what you've got to look at, is what truly changes the performance of a loan. And it's when you start getting multiple layers of risk, the debt ratio is so high that the customer has to pull from savings to make ends meet each month. You know, we don't say that to a customer in a loan. That, to me, is, you know, when we're approving somebody with a 55 or 60 back end ratio, debt to income ratio, we should be saying them, by the way, are you aware, once we approve you for this loan, you're going to have to pull from savings to make your payment each month. And see if the customer still wants that loan. They're not planning on that. You know, and we've got to get away from, in FHA's pipeline, debt ratios that are not realistic. That's the ultimate thing. My customer has a job and they can afford the payment. Stick with that premise, because if you really want to look at what failed in subprime, it was the no-income verification. Sir, and we've tightened up our credit, so that issue is gone. But don't lose sight of, you know, make sure the person can afford the payment. That's more important than making them pull a couple more $1,000 out of the bank or get a bigger gift from mom and dad to buy the house in the first place.
Well, you know what's really interesting? There was my business partner, Andy Schell, who you know very well, said, Dave, did you catch Sean Hannity's program last night? He had on Michael Moore. And this was the first. He did a two-part series on it. And Michael Moore was on there. And he says, it's the first time that I actually agree to the Michael Moore. I said, what? Are you losing your mind? Going, Michael Moore? He's against America. He's against free enterprise. He's just against so many things we stand. But he says, go watch the program. Well, I haven't been able to watch that segment. I watched the one last night that ran. And it was, you know, it was a very good debate. I encourage everyone to go online at Fox and watch it. But here's the thing. He said, Michael Moore was making this point. He says it was big business. Of course, he's anti-big business, but he said it was big business. It was big business that brought up the housing crisis. And Sean was saying, no, it wasn't big business. It was consumers buying things they couldn't afford. I wanted to scream at the TV, call in. Of course, I have access to some of the producers anyway with me being on Fox Business. And I wanted to say, you're both right. Where we stretched out there was big businesses, the Wall Street firms. When they got involved, they started expanding what could be the possibilities through underwriting, automated underwriting systems, Alice. And we saw the consequences, and it's that layering effect. I tell you, we could talk on and on and on for about all of that. It's a great topic, but we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
All right, we're back. We've got more to talk about. There's a lot of developments going on, and Alice, there's been some changes there's been a lot of attention on Ginnie Mae here recently. Ginnie Mae approvals, a lot of people trying to get their HUD approvals, Ginnie Mae approvals. Oh, by the way, one of the things I want to talk about is the FHA net worth requirements potentially going up from $250,000 to $1 million. Your thoughts on that, Alice? Is this a good thing? Not a good thing. We talked about it a little bit more, but there's been a lot more information coming forth. It looks like it's coming down the pike. Have you heard anything different?
No, I think you're right. I think we are absolutely in for a net worth increase. You know, the Mortgage Bankers Association, a group, the FHA Business Practices Working Group that I sit on, you know, we talked a lot about, is there a better number, you know, to say that at, for example, $500,000 is still offers the protection that FHA would need without eliminating a lot of really good needed players and some more outlying areas of where, you know, to make sure consumers have access to financing from still good companies. But it really, you know, I think, again, Mr. Stevens has come right out and said it's going to be $1 million. So I think that may be a foregone conclusion.
Well, I think it's interesting. That will be in tandem or equal to what Ginnie Mae approvals are requiring. What are you hearing about is there interest in the Ginnie Mae approvals out there, Alice? What are you hearing?
Well, there are. We get calls just like you do, Dave, but, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on that, too, because it is such a big leap. So when a credit union or community bank is saying, we've got products that we're comfortable lending on with FHA, in particular, for example, manufactured homes, or, you know, we feel that maybe the large players, the B of A's and large companies of the world, have some tighter credit overlays that we don't feel we need in our market. So, you know, can we offer Ginnie Mae, should we become a Ginnie Mae issuer? And I wanted to get your feedback on, you know, is that working for companies, for the community banks and credit unions that think they can manage credit a little bit better, at, you know, on their smaller scales and be a good issuer?
Well, that's a great question because we do get contacted, as you do, a lot on, you know, should I become approved? Well, it's more like I want to become approved. And I ask the question, why do you want to become approved? Well, because everyone has increased the credit standards, or the banks have got so many credit overlays, we need to be able selling direct so we can do the lower FICOs. And I go, not necessarily a good idea. I understand the motivation. As things contract and you want to be reach out and take care of every buyer and do everything you can to get everyone financed that you think should be able to get financed. But the reality is that you may want to think that out thoroughly. One of the number one things keeping people from becoming approved with Ginnie Mae is their FHA compare ratio. So, Alice, would you explain for our listeners a little bit about that, and then I'm going to go back into what we're answering. But that is something that comes up all the time. What is their FHA compare ratio? How do they find it? Where can they go to find out what theirs is? I was just with a client recently, a couple weeks ago, and they said, I don't even know I had an FHA compare ratio.
Oops.
Yeah.
Neighborhood Watch. Yeah. You can actually, it's a public view site. So when you go to HUD.gov and you actually surf your way to the lender's homepage, on that page is Neighborhood Watch public view. Now, lenders have access with an ID and password to actually get loan level specific data, but the public actually can see what is a lender's compare ratio. In other words, what is this lender's delinquency rate in comparison to national numbers? You can also play with the numbers to be able to come up with regional and state comparisons. So, you know, FHA monitors that the lender should not have delinquencies that are excessive. So, for example, if the national delinquency rate is 9% and you as a lender, your delinquency rate is 9%, then your compare ratio is 100%. FHA, there are certain privileges you get if you keep your compare ratio under 150, but boy, you get up over a 180% compare ratio and it's, you know, it's a pattern and it sustains up in those high numbers or above that, you're likely to be audited.
Yeah, and be audited, not only that, your Ginnie Mae approval, if you're seeking one, it could be in jeopardy. We have gotten companies that are up in that upper stratosphere approved, but I'll tell you, it's that was then, which is, you know, 6 months ago and over the last six-month period, but it seems like it's getting more and more conservative. More and more people are paying attention to that compare ratio and go, well, that's not fair. Well, tell me about a lot of things going on in the industry right now.
Yeah,
that may not
you know,
seem fair.
One heads up, there's a servicing compare ratio too lenders need to be aware of. A lot of them knew they have an underwriting one that looks at the delinquencies and defaults, but you want to make sure that you look at your servicing portfolio compare ratio. So the main one everyone looks at is all my loans that I've gotten insured with FHA are in this number, even if I sold it and it's off someplace else. You want to make sure you're monitoring the number that's specific to your servicing pipeline, even and especially for the companies that maybe have a very small servicing portfolio.
That is a good point. We need to come back and spend more time, Alice, and almost do a whole segment on the compare ratio, what's behind it, where do they go. I mean, literally walk that people through that. We're going to be having more information as soon as we get this website created. I am so impatient. I want that yesterday. And this will be one of the things. We'll have that information up there. Again, the program we're offering here today and every day, every week, it's a weekly program at this point, before we get on and talk to you, the mortgage industry, about what's going on in the industry, things that you should be knowledgeable on, things you should be paying attention to, bring out experiences. For example, the Ginnie Mae approval is a great question, Alice. A lot of people are coming and to us and to yourself saying, I want to get Ginnie Mae approved so I can do loans with a lower credit score. I'm telling you, think that through thoroughly, because you may get approved if your compare ratio is within line. You had, if you qualify for, have the $1 million plus net worth, you have the experience in servicing. Again, that's a big area. You know, you can subservice it, and you can hire a subservicer out there like a Dovenmuehle, a Cenlar. We do a lot of referencing to Dovenmuehle. David Allison is a good friend and someone that we pay attention to, or we refer business out to. But I'm telling you, is if you are going forward and getting approval just so you can get or be able to underwrite loans and sell loans to Ginnie Mae with a lower FICO score or more liberal underwriting standards, you may want to think that through, because that will drive your compare ratio up and jeopardize your approval down the road, and quite frankly, jeopardize potentially your whole company. So it's something that we're seeing. Now, so one thing is, what's motivating people, Alice, to do this? And it's to be able to, they're getting tired of these credit overlays. So word of warning on that. Then it's the process of, how long does it take? What's involved in the Ginnie Mae application process? I want to tell you, if these guys, we're getting to know the people. Alice, you and I, when we were back in Washington, D.C. earlier this year, we had the privilege of sitting down with some of the top senior folks there at Ginnie Mae. Great group of people. They're overwhelmed with work, Alice. Remember when we had that conversation in their conference room? They're overwhelmed with work. And so it just like if you're an underwriter or a mortgage company, and you have more applications than you can look at, what's the inclination? Take the one that's thorough, complete, and get them through as quickly as possible. So the number one thing is, if you're looking to do a Ginnie Mae application, make sure you submit a clean Ginnie Mae application. And let me tell you, they even have a stacking order they want it in. Now, that's something we do. We work with Allison training the people once they become approved, or we'll go through a lot of that. But we actually have a service where we will help you get approved with Ginnie Mae. We have a gentleman by the name of Matt Robinson who works with us. Is very knowledgeable on this. Used to work at Ginnie Mae. Literally knows everyone inside. And now, by the way, we do not get special favors when we go through there. I want to make sure you understand that. But we at least know the process and know it well. So when we do go in and submit to Ginnie Mae, the probability of having all the T's crossed and I's dotted so it gets through the first time goes way up. And it's changing, so there's times even then we'll miss some minor thing, but most of it's in place. 95% of the time it's in place the first time we go through, and the approvals do go through. So then the next question might be, how long is it taking? Well, I tell you, 6 months. We don't get any special privileges because we know some people there. It does not mean we get any special privileges. It's taking 6 months for a clean application, Alice. That's a long time.
That's a long time, yeah. But like you said, in their defense, it's just the volume of applications that they're receiving.
And they're trying hard. They're hiring extra staff. One of the things you talked about in the former session was the additional financing that and budgeting that's being hopefully given to to Ginnie Mae and FHA so that they can add the additional staff to get through these applications and do their business more efficiently or more effectively and in a more timely manner. Would be a better way to say it. Now, the last question is, are people really realizing the benefits of being an issuer? The answer for those that do it intelligently and methodically, yes, they are, Alice. And so the good news is it can be very effective. It can actually help earnings, and it does give you the ability to control the credit standards. Again, don't get out of line with it. Be careful. Realize you're still on the hook. Your compare ratio will be the one that will show up. But it is good to know that there are benefits and they're being realized. Now, you can just get the Ginnie Mae approval and do what many have the approval. It's beneficial to have it, that adds value to a company, and never use it. But that's kind of like buying a new car, parking it in the garage, and leaving it there and not driving it. So.
It looks so pretty.
It looks so pretty there. Look at my new car.
Right. I just hang my Ginnie Mae certificate on the wall here just so it looks good.
Yeah, well, you know,
it is the execution more profitable. That's what we've got to try and help people understand.
And we're going to spend more time on that because I think it's such an important topic, and we're going to spend one whole segment. I've talked to the folks at Ginnie Mae asking them to come on the program. They're just so busy. I think we're hard to do it, but we know enough what's going on. The answer is it can be very profitable if you also are taking on more risk. I mean, take on more risk. And it's something that you can't just do. In fact, they won't approve you unless you, and they're convinced, unless you convince them, you have the experience. So, Alice, I think this is why it's so important. That's why our two companies being in partnership and working together as we are on mortgage training is so important, because it's one thing to get them in the door. It's another thing. It's kind of like the guy that got his private airplane pilot license passed, and he's now got his pilot, and he's sitting in the airplane about ready to take off for the first time. He goes, now what do I do? I said,
where do I
want to
go?
Yeah. Where do I want to go? So there's a lot of great things we could talk about, but the answer is yes, you should go for it if you plan on using it and if you're prepared to step up and manage the risk.
Along that lines, it's just, if I'm a community bank, I have my own source of funds. If I'm a lender, we've talked about how let me figure out how to get funding first before I can figure out how to do my Ginnie Mae. So a couple other questions I wanted to run by you was just the idea of Freddie Mac announcing to be in the warehouse lending industry. Tell me what this means for us. Is this going to be something quick that people are going to feel? How's this going to work?
Well, number one, we've been hearing rumors and talk. I mean, Joe Muren, who was a past president of the Ginnie Mae, who we've been privileged to get to know, Alice, and it really helped open the door and get the initiative to get the government to the point where they recognize that there is a warehouse lending crisis, number one, a liquidity crisis in the warehouse lending circles. And again, if you're not, those familiar are not familiar with warehouse lending is a short-term credit facility, non-bank mortgage bankers, those mortgage bankers that are not a financial institution, they go out and borrow on a line of credit the necessary amount of money to fund your loan. And then that loan sits on that warehouse line until they sell it into the secondary market. So that's what a warehouse line does. So, again, there were just 2 years ago, there was something like 150 or more warehouse lenders, Alice, in the market providing credit, warehouse lines of credit to the industry. That has contracted down to by 90%. There's only about 12, 15 companies, and it falls sometimes down to less than that. There's been at times where there's less than 10 companies in the market from 150. So it's a crisis, and a lot of the companies, a lot of warehouse lines are provided by banks, Alice, and a lot of those banks, like Nat City was taken over by PNC. Nat City was one of the largest warehouse lenders in the market. They are in the process of having it. PNC says, we're not continuing that channel of business, that line of business, so much time to get out of the business. So that's a whole other story, but that has brought this to attention. So there's been talk by Joe Muren, who used to be at Ginnie Mae, to get the federal government involved. It sounds like that's taken on some track, has gotten traction. MBA has been supporting it. A number of people within the industry, within the Beltway, are supporting it. So this week, as of Friday, the Washington Business Journal made it official. We heard from the Charles Haldeman, who is the CEO for Freddie Mac, that they are doing a pilot program with Natty Mac. Now, Natty Mac is a part of the Guggenheim Partner Company. Or it's a Guggenheim Partners. It's a company with a Guggenheim family backing it. And I know Natty Mac. I know David Crystal there and a number of the folks, John Ventola, great group of guys there that are have been running that for a period of time. And now this appears to be a very significant step where Freddie Mac has actually done a partnership, formalized it. They've come out and made that announcement on Friday, about the fact that they're getting into it. So what does that do? It's not clear, Alice, but it appears that they are going to offer a facility that's going to become what we refer to as a secondary facility. A primary facility is like we were talking about, Nat City offers, Co-America offers a wonderful facility, Colonial did until they were taken over by BB&T.
By borrowing direct from them.
Yeah, that's right.
If I'm a direct facility, I'm a lender, I'm using their money direct, I manage my own line.
Exactly. And so that's called the primary facility. What it appears and what we understand that Freddie is doing with Natty Mac is they're setting up what's called a secondary facility, oftentimes referred to generically as a gestation facility or a repo facility. And it's a facility that where once the primary line has been accessed to fund that loan, then this secondary facility comes through, pays off the primary line, and it's carried in that gestation facility or in this other secondary facility until such time as the loan can be sold into the secondary markets. So that appears to be what's happening. Again, the announcement just came out Friday. You and I, Alice, are going to be in San Diego. We'll be looking for more details on this, as I'm sure a lot more will be coming out while we're there.
Oh, yeah.
Alice, we're just about out of time. We've given a lot of information today. I thank you so much for letting me take some of your time on Saturday. You're always, again, so good to help us digest all these issues. And so many listeners love listening to your giggle. Like one listener says, just record her giggle and just play it in the background every once in a while. We appreciate so much, Alice, being with it. Any more parting thoughts that you have for us as we wrap up this broadcast?
No, I just can't wait till the next show when we get to hear your update on what's going on with this warehouse lending issue, because I'm very curious to hear more about how this is going to work out and how quickly it can perhaps put some relief in the market.
Well, it's definitely needed, and independent mortgage bankers, and I'm running the panel for those of you that are going to be in San Diego Tuesday at 11 o'clock. I will be doing a panel, and it's the let me bring it up here real fast so I can give you the specific information. But it's a panel that is we're addressing. The title of the panel is Success Strategies for More Independent Mortgage Bankers. It almost should be titled, you know, The Future of Independent Mortgage Bankers. And there's been a lot of question about it. I have speaker Scott Cooley, president of Cooley Consulting. I've got Craig Fogarty of the Tower Group, and Tim Stearns of Lenders One all on the panel, and I'm the moderator. If you're in San Diego and can come to the convention center, we're in room 7 A and B in the upper level. We'd love to have you come in. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. We appreciate you listening in each week, and if you find this valuable, we encourage you to forward this around. If you need the link, call me or email me, and we'll make sure you get the information. We have a flyer we've created that you can forward on to everyone. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Market Update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.